Welcome back to another episode of Multifamily AP 360. And today's our guest is Sridhar Kumar Sannidhi from Grow Wealth to Retire LLC. So welcome back, Sridhar. You came episode 69, and thank you. And thank you for coming back.
Thanks, Rama. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure, thank you. A little bit about Sridhar. Sridhar, the CEO of Grow Wealth to Retire. He's accredited deal syndicator and also passive investor in commercial and residential for 25 plus years. He has more than 400 million in assets under management, co-sponsored approximately 3,700 units plus, and in 15 multifamily complexes in Texas and Tennessee markets. Actively and passively invested more than 11,600 plus multifamily unit syndications across the US. So with that, Sridhar, you want to add anything?
No, thanks. That covers it all. Out of those 3,700, we full cycle 1,000 units. At the moment, we are only 2,000 plus units only. Yeah.
Awesome. So share me a little bit more about, you mentioned like there are a few properties are full cycle. Share me some experiences, you know, some learnings from those properties.
Sure. So we were lucky to full cycle before this whole economic down cycle started. We were able to full cycle a couple of properties in 2 years and exceeding the projected returns in those two properties. Third one, we exceeded the average rate of return, but we did not complete the full projected returns because we exited in a short span. So still we have exceeded the average rate of return on the third one too. So all three, returns wise, we exceeded average rate of return. I think we crossed 28% or something like that, you know, across these three properties. The lessons we learned is like some of these properties, we need to be very thorough on tenants we have. And another thing I want to say nowadays, I started reiterating, is to have a good partnership team. Otherwise, things will be tough when the economy is downturn. Like there will be more chances for friction with partners when the economy goes down. So those are the major learnings.
Sure. Thank you for sharing that. So you mentioned having strong partnership. Can you a little bit elaborate on that? So what do you mean and how do you choose the right partners? You know,
first thing is the partnership's vision should align, like what they want to do with that syndication, how they want to deliver the results for the investors, the projected returns, okay? That is one first thing. And the second thing is when there is a priority issues, right? Oftentimes each partner will have a different thought process. So they have to collectively come up with the best approach for the investor returns, right? Example, like let's assume some of these deals nowadays are with variable interest rate. So when you have variable interest rate, and most of the deals nowadays are having cash starvation, means like they pretty much are able to make the payments for the loan, but they may not have enough funds for the interest rate cap escrow type of scenarios, right? In those scenarios, some partners will say, oh, okay, let us fund it and run the show so that we don't disturb the passive investors. As such, they will suspend the distributions at that time. And some other set of partners will say, no, do a capital call. So those kind of things. So that is where strong partnership will come into play. Like you need to have a partner who can financially sound and then take these minor challenges in a more investor-friendly way rather than scaring the investor and then taking stress paths, right? That is another thing. And also when the economy is tough, right? Some of them lean to going back to W-2, focus more time on the W-2 job and less focus on the syndication side, the time spending wise, right? That then some of the projects, like the CapEx projects, can be deprioritized and all those risks are there. So one should not limit the time allocated to the project in this kind of thing. Those are the major things I would say. And expenses wise, we have to run in a tight lid. So we need to work closely with the property management company because accounts payable streamlining and all would be a challenge.
Yeah, thank you. So you mentioned some of, if you have partners with part-time partners, like if they are W-2 and also working this one, how exactly we need to set the expectations straight, you know?
So partners means the people who want to transition to this full time eventually, but this could be their first or second syndication type of thing. They're part of that. And they will be in a dilemma. Should I go full time on this one yet or not? Those kind of thing, right? So the setting of the expectations wise, like we need to continuously keep track of the progress and CapEx items and all, and continuous progress business plan that has been designed for that project. So we need to reiterate with the partners, like this time they need to spend on the project should not be compromised. So if they have other challenges, maybe they have to work around this one. They should give this one as a priority rather than their
Yeah.
other challenges.
Yeah, maybe setting accountability.
Yep.
Yeah. Got it. So last 2 years, like interest rates very quickly. How exactly you navigated like this kind of challenging situations, you know? So share me some best practice around, you know, increasing or maintaining revenue or cutting expenses, you know, overall.
Yeah, definitely it impacted in a couple of our properties. The ones which we bought at the peak, market peak, they had more impact. On top of that, delinquencies have spiked in some submarkets. And also insurance and tax payments have gone up. So it's all put together. We have stress on a couple of properties, but we are able to manage within the GP team. Our first priority is to manage through GP team, not to do any capital call. So we want to give the trust to investors, saying that by investing in at least they, we will make sure that project is in good standing, despite the variable interest rate and all. So now we are planning to refinance them. So we are working with multiple brokers to see what is the best option at this point in time. So we still have time for refinance one more year, couple of properties. But to be on the safe side, we have been researching what will be the best one. So
Got it. So what exactly managed through GP? So you guys funded to funded
yes.
to deals?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So GPs put their own money into deals. Yeah.
Got it. So from delinquency side, how exactly you mitigated the risks?
So delinquency earlier, take at a normal pace means after 30 days, then you need to give another notice and all that. And then sometimes it gets delayed by another couple of weeks in the paperwork and all. Now we are on top of things. The day it turns to the 30 days, immediately we are following up. How come we have not filed the delinquency this one yet, eviction yet, right?
Yeah.
That is the main thing. That, and another thing is from a collections point of view, we increase the number of times we knock the doors, and also number of times we text the tenant rent due situation, right? So that's how we are improving the collections overall. So literally, I mean, we were able to improve it a lot in few properties. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So we are in like, you know, second quarter of 2024, like April 3rd. So how exactly, like because of this interest rates or inflation, all this, how exactly is impacting multifamily space? And which direction do you see any changes in, or any, you know, different shifts or different movements in multifamily space?
So originally, I thought that we may have some relief in second quarter, but the geopolitical tensions looks like rate cut in second quarter is also not a possibility. Most likely, it will push to third quarter. And I'm guessing there won't be more than two rate cuts this year. And even then, those may not be a big rate cuts after seeing all these fluctuations from the beginning of the year to now. It changed a lot. Even 10-year treasury went up again. So that is not a good sign. That would create more tough situation for refinancing, right? So we need to be very creative. There are only few workable solutions at this point in time for surviving with the variable interest rates. So we are exploring all the possibilities that can be done. Yeah.
Yeah, got it. So another aspect, like from value add versus new land development, new construction, right? Any thoughts on that?
Value add are not that favorable because of the insurance costs going up so high. It's not a percentage hike, it is a multiple hike. Like we used to pay $600 to $800 per door in Houston market. Now it is $2,000, almost like three times. In some areas, it's four times. So most of the deals won't work if it goes up by so much. So that is the reason I think some of these markets are severely impacted. So that is the reason even I'm leaning towards construction projects more. Land development is good in certain areas. If you are with 5 to 10 mile radius from the current metro area, those areas are flourishing well. If you are beyond that, it's not much progress at the moment. Obviously, the utilities, availability of utilities to the site is a bigger factor. So if you have projects like that with the utilities and all, they are going well. Even in that one, my observation is there are single family lots, which are like $1 million plus type of homes. That market is very strong. The ones which are on the lower side, they are little weaker. So we have one land development and we are looking to do more. I think this year, maybe up in the second quarter onwards, we will speed up the acquisitions. Right now we are doing the acquisitions. Despite all this, because this is the best time to buy, in my opinion, because you will get the properties with a very high cap rate, right? So you can obviously refinance when cap rate compresses.
Yeah, thank you. So how exactly lending impacting overall, you know, land development side, construction side, or, you know, LTV side or interest rates wise?
So on the land side, not that many banks are giving the loans, and even the ones which are giving, they increased the escrow requirements. Earlier, they used to take escrow for 1 year interest. Now they're asking for 2 year interest escrow. And also the LTC, LTV, it used to be almost 75% LTC we used to get on land side. Now it is 50 to 60%. And value add also the similar situations, the LTV, LTCs have gone down, and underwritings also has changed. So the lenders are underwriting almost half a point more than what the market is right now. So
yeah,
because of that, the valuations are showing up less. And so that in turn is reducing the proceeds. So we need to raise more money to close the same amount of doors now compared to 1 year back or 2 years back.
Yeah, got it. Thank you. Thank you very much on that. So if you look for, if you're still looking for value-add deals, what kind of deals you are looking?
So I'm looking for value-add deals that are 1980 plus built, and then median household income is around 60,000 plus, with an opportunity to improve the units and improve the exteriors and then push the rents up easily. Still, those opportunities do exist, and some of these deals are really good in the current market, because some issues like insurance and all eventually will be sorted out. They will go down after a year or two, in my opinion, because as more carriers will start getting into that market when the rates are high, right? They make a lot of money. So the more carriers come and the market will adjust itself to the fair price. So you know, initially we may have pain to go through next 1 or 2 years on these deals work out in the long run.
Sure, sure. Thank you. So do you see any challenges with new supply impact on value add or new construction deals, you know?
So I've been following up so many reports, and everybody said that there are so many distressed assets and the market would be flooded and all. I'm not seeing that many distressed assets in the market. Yes, there are there, but not to the expectation of everybody. Everybody is waiting to buy more, and then not that many distressed assets.
Yeah,
there are some assets which still can make money by doing full cycle. Those assets are coming to the market, in my observation, like maybe 50% like that. Not a distressed market. Maybe a small pockets here and there are there, some distress, but overall market, we're not seeing too much foreclosures or anything like that. And multifamily space, the foreclosure percentage is still very, very small compared to the overall size of the market.
Thank you. So how do you see multifamily space next 2 to 5 years?
So multifamily will go through this tough time until year end 2024. From 2025 beginning onwards, it will start turning favorably. As the interest rates start going down, caps will compress, and then pricing will improve. On the supply side also, construction has slowed down. The number of new permits have gone down, or even if they get the permits, they're not starting the work. Supply also impacted in several markets for past 18 months, I would say. So that would definitely create an opportunity for the existing properties in near future. And again, once the market improves, interest rates improve, the supply will improve too. So at this time, for construction deals, mostly they go with the debt fund type of scenarios. They're paying very high interest rate, 10 plus percent, right? So that, and to cross the 10% interest rate based project, right, and make it profitable, is really challenging.
Yeah, thank you. Do you see any rent growth next year?
Yes, there will be rent growth, not in all markets, some sub-markets. So that is why I said, right, the markets where your median household income is 60K plus, those are in good neighborhoods. So there are those areas I'm seeing, I'm expecting minimum 2% rent growth in those markets.
Yeah. So do you see any disruptions technology-wise anyway in multifamily space in next 2 to 5 years?
So the disruptions may come. Mostly they come in very high growth areas, not in the normal market. Immediate future, like something that they feel that the market is going to really grow at a very fast pace. Markets like Austin and all, right? There will be more supply with kind of disruptions. But in other places, I see it would be a moderate growth rate.
Yeah, sure. So, would you share any best experiences so far?
The best experience, obviously, nobody anticipated that interest rate goes up so sharply. One should have like a fund or access to capital in case of these sudden spikes and all that, even if they are going the variable interest rate. Still, a lot of people do variable interest rate based deals. The only thing is they buy the rate cap for longer duration. So that one should underwrite the deal in that format. If we do a longer duration, that thing that would still help. Financing is the key. And then have a strong partner, like even if they don't have cash reserves or something like that, who can get the finances, right? That would help the syndication definitely. Other than that, yeah, another thing is now when the market is tough, all the agencies and all lenders will work extra hard to show you that you're not doing your job. So one should be very prepared to get all things straightened up and be on top of things. Otherwise, they may get into more of the issues with either lenders or market, Fannie Freddie.
Thank you. So you mentioned like you need to have funds, right? Now,
Yeah.
like market shifting from co-GP model to fund model, right? Any
Yep.
thoughts on that? What do you see that?
Yeah, and even we started a fund to acquire properties too. So it gives some flexibility for the syndicators. And another advantage is in a fund model, you can bring in more partners quickly versus the syndication model. The paperwork and the whole cycle is pretty longer. So that is one big advantage. And the funds, usually they have a standard pattern in doing the due diligence and then doing reporting to investors, etc. So that is really strong in fund model versus syndications. Oftentimes partners think that in communication can be flexible and then they may delay it and all that. Those kind of improvements, communication improvements will happen with the, in a fund model. Fund accessibility improves. Only challenge is if it is not a fund of fund style, means like if you don't have a special purpose vehicle for each deal, right? You may not know like how the allocation is unless you closely follow the fund newsletters. So that would be one negative, I would say,
Yeah.
closed-end funds. But if it is a fund of funds, then it is similar to syndication with more communication and more control.
Yeah, thank you. So would you also share any challenging experiences in last 2 years or 3 years?
Yeah, definitely. My last deal was one of the toughest deals I ever did. It took almost 8 months to close, but I learned a lot in this process. And the things I learned first is like, even though you get initial term sheet, never ever trust that you may be able to close with the term sheet. So we got a term sheet with Fannie to give a new loan at $23 million on the deal. By the time we are about to start the closing process, they dropped that $23 million to $17 million. It's a big drop.
Yeah.
Sightings, the property condition, the current market condition, like they changed that. When we started this process, the market started shifting in the opposite direction, right? So
Yeah.
this property happened to be second tier location. So they said that now we are not giving the second tier location new loan. So you're welcome to assume the loan. So I have to change the strategy to the assumption. The moment a assumption comes in, then obviously the fundraise would be more. At that time, the pref equity is the only option to close it quickly. And pref equity also, they're more worried when the market is uncertain. So very few players will come forward. So that creates more challenges. So your time will run out. So you need to start working with seller. And obviously, if you are not in the right position, then the other party may take advantage of you, right? Those kind of situations may arise. You need to navigate through, but there will be solutions for every problem. So you need to sit and navigate it through. So that is how I had to do. I had to take a seller financing. I have to assume the loan. So everything takes time. Like if you change a new loan to the assumption, then it's a different team in the agency side. So then they take their own sweet time. So you cannot speed up the process. And on the other side, your contract time will expire. So you need to plan it properly ahead and run through while you are in LOI phase itself. Make sure that you have plan A, plan B, plan C type of that. So after that, nowadays I see like plan A to D, like four different options for everything I'm looking in when it comes to loans and all. We continuously look for options, even though we start the loan closing process, until it is closed, we are not trusting anymore in the current market.
Yeah, thank you. So how do you communicate these kind of situations with investors?
So that is a very good question. So ever since COVID came, I started this practice of having monthly calls with investors. So the monthly calls, this is besides the monthly newsletter. So we have an open call with all our investors, irrespective of the deal they are in. A single call, we share all the deals and their performances, etc. And we answer every single question. So that keeps them at ease, saying that, yeah, I know what is going on and there's nothing hidden here. So that is the best way I thought. So they are very cooperative. I'm very thankful to my investors. So we are working hard to bring everything back to normalcy. And our first priority is none of the property should go for any stress.
Yeah.
So stress in the sense like a foreclosure or default type of situation. So.
Yeah.
So we are working hard in that aspect. So temporarily, they feel that things are not doing well, but slowly they would see the improvement.
Thank you. So any personal habits that are helping you to be successful?
I think one has to be very disciplined. So in this multifamily syndication, it's a business. It's not like a property owned, like a single family home. You own it. And then if the tenant calls in, you can be very flexible with the tenants and okay, I will come tomorrow or day after tomorrow to fix it if it's not urgent type of thing. But here it's not like it's a business. So one has to respond quickly and make sure that we are getting good feedback from the tenants. So that is a constant vertical effort we need to put in to maintain that. That's what we are doing on that. That is one thing, like discipline is one thing and emotions will carry a bigger problem. So you need to always think in the business sense. Otherwise, it is easy to get into trouble with emotions, right? So emotions should not come into play. And when you're working with a team, oftentimes small things can create like bigger problems. So we need to be very, very upfront and what would be the consequences for each scenario and all that. Discuss thoroughly, I think, then it would be a better...
Sure. Thank you. Any new learnings that play a major role in recent times?
Yeah, definitely. The new learnings is like when it comes to sourcing, right? Now I'm looking more towards institutional sourcing also for funds. Earlier, it was mostly retail. And second thing working on is like in a regular equity market, stock market or bond market, everything, the main advantage there is the liquidity. Means anytime if you want money, liquidate your asset and take the money. So I'm working on the similar setup in syndications also going forward. It's me alone as a GP syndicator. So I will give the flexibility for the investor to take money at any point in time. We will buy the share. That is kind of assurance we want to build into the deal. And I was giving the advantage of to know more in detail what is going on day to day also, like in the sense like even reporting. We want to give access to some level on the data itself. They can run the reports on their themselves type of thing, like sub portals type we are working through. It's a long way, but we started just now. That is another thing we want to see, like more clarity and where they invest and how it is progressing and all. So a lot of that is another thing, new learning and partnership. So we want to emphasize more on partnerships and watch more closely for a longer period of time before joining and doing a partnership. That is another thing. So, and be prepared to put the full money in case we are not able to raise the money. So that is why the deal size also, I may focus on it. I don't want to go for too big of a deal. So that is another thing. So at any point in time, let's say if I'm short by $500,000, I would jump up and then put that $500,000 to close the deal and not to give any more stress type of planning we are doing. So for that, whatever is needed in the back end, fund sources and all, we are building up at the moment.
Yeah, thank you. So if we can implement that liquidity, that's really game changer in real estate spaces. Morely real estate is illiquid, right? So
Yeah.
yeah, that's a good initiative. Thank you for
Yeah.
that. So any books that impacted your life? Recent, any recent books?
Recent books I'm starting, but I'm not finishing so many books now. Started recently a couple of books, 4 hour week or whatever it is. That one, there is another one, Think and Grow Rich, also again I'm reading. So whenever I get it, so those are the two I would say. And the third book I forgot.
Sure. So how can listeners can connect with you, Sridhar?
So they can go come to our website, www.growwealth2retire.com, growwealth2retire.com, and they can search me on LinkedIn. So
Sure. And thank you very much, Sridhar. Thank you for sharing your journey and your multifamily space, and value-add deals versus land development deals, and based on challenging experiences and also personal side. Thank you very
you're
much.
most welcome, and thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.